This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A few weeks ago, we talked on the program about the Internet of Things, where common things are connected to the Internet. Maybe it's a fitness wristband that you carry during your workout. Maybe it's a thermostat that's now online and can be controlled from your phone, or a refrigerator that knows what's in it and it can send you a tweet when the milk's gone bad. But with all these new sources of data about you and your habits, are we giving enough thought to security and privacy? Bruce Schneier is a writer and security technologist. He's author of many books, including Schneier on Security. He is chief technical officer at CO3 Systems in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he's written several articles about the darker side of the Internet of Things. He joins us from Minnesota Public Radio. Welcome back to Science Friday.
Thank you.
Two different concerns. Are they connected together, security and privacy?
Well, they are, because it's all about data. I mean, fundamentally, these devices are collecting data and disseminating data. And the question is, who has access to it, under what authority, what kind of unauthorized access is there, what kind of secondary uses there are. But it's fundamentally about data being produced about us by these devices.
And security relates to what's going on with the devices themselves and making sure they're working properly?
I mean, it's a lot of things. It really depends on the device. Yeah. What's happening is, just like 20 years ago, you started seeing clocks and everything.
Right.
You started seeing them in your microwave, in your oven, on your car, because clocks became cheap and clocks started being put in every device. We're getting to the point where Internet connectivity is getting that cheap, and it's coming into everything. So we have, you talked about the Nest thermostat, the Fitbit, refrigerators, other appliances, game consoles, cameras. All of these objects have Internet connectivity and sensors. They're collecting data, and it's being stored somewhere for some potentially useful purpose. And now we're worried about what's the security of the device, because it's basically a computer. What's the security of the data when it's stored elsewhere? And what kind of rules are being applied to these small portable embedded computers?
And so what concerns you most about this then?
Well, two things. The first is that this really gives the Internet a set of eyes and ears it never had before. I mean, the Internet of yesterday was the Internet of the things we typed into it. It was Facebook. It was text messages. It was a lot of data, but it was data that we gave it.
Right.
Now the Internet is starting to look around for itself. So it's cameras and that are motion activated, seeing things. It's the refrigerator that detects the barcodes of things come into it and times when the milk spoils. It's your Nest thermostat, which knows the temperature around you. And by extension, sort of who's where. We're seeing smoke detectors that Nest is coming out with. Other appliances that know when they're being turned on. So now we know when people are in the house. And I just think of this as the eyes and ears of the Internet. Devices in your car that know a lot about where the car is going, what it's doing, how it's working. Mm-hmm. So suddenly, these devices are now much more than our computers. And they're semi-autonomous. Right? Your thermostat's going to make decisions based on the data it receives. Your car is going to make decisions. Other groups might make decisions. We're already seeing insurance companies say that if you agree to have a black box in your car and we can monitor where you're going and how fast you're driving, et cetera, we might give you a reduction in your insurance rates.
Right, right.
So all of these devices are coming around us, cameras. Listening devices. We're being tracked in stores. There's now ways that marketers will track us as we go through department stores or supermarkets based on our movements and the devices we carry. So all of these sensors give the Internet and sort of those who access the data this very large envelope of knowledge about us. And then separately and sort of secondarily is how secure these computers in any way. I mean, we already know that computers are being used for identity theft, to commit fraud, for denial of service attacks. These are just another set of computers. And we're now seeing Target, the breach had to do with the point of sale terminals, right? The embedded computers in the cash registers. We are seeing routers being hacked. And so some of these appliances, these embedded
refrigerators
computers.
Refrigerators being hacked, you know?
You know, that turned out to be a hoax story.
Is that right?
But the next one won't be, because it's just a computer. Really, where we were in the mid-1990s with personal computers, they were widely insecure, no one was patching them, lots of vulnerabilities, is where we are today with these embedded systems. The worry is that the economics isn't the same for us to start fixing them. Right? Mm. There really isn't any way for you to patch your router. But you have a router at home, yeah. DSL or cable. You know, if there's a vulnerability, we can't patch it. The patch capability isn't built in.
We'll have to depend on the people who make these and connect them to the internet to send the update, right? To my refrigerator, my clock, my thermostat.
Assuming your device can receive the update. So we have two problems here.
Yeah.
One is these are very, very low-cost devices, and there often isn't anyone who can patch them. And this is important. These embedded computers are designed very quickly without a lot of engineering expertise. There often aren't people who have the ability to patch them. Right? Mm-hmm. They're designing the next one. The economics isn't there like your computer where right. patches made sense.
Right.
Also, some of them don't have the ability to receive a patch. So your router might not be able to be patched even if a patch was sent. Right, it might not have the update capability. So we're
right.
still very much hoping for the best with these devices. And as they proliferate, you know, the fear is that we're just not going to get the best.
Let me give out a number, 844-724-8255, 844-724-8255. Should I be concerned that Big Brother might use my refrigerator, my toaster, my alarm clock, whatever it is, to spy on me without me knowing it?
They are doing it, and often it's in the service agreement you didn't read, so you probably should know it. But, of course, no one reads those, so they don't know it. These devices do collect data. They collect data for the purpose of psychological manipulation, right? Advertising. That's the whole point of the business model of the internet, surveillance. So these devices are collecting data. The data is being bought and sold. You know, we're living in the U.S., so you do not have the rights to that data. You have no say over who can buy it, who can sell it, who can use it. We know that the government is often getting a copy of that data for their various purposes. You know, but for surveillance data, you don't have to go much further than your cell phone. It's a device that knows exactly where you are at any moment. It keeps strong tabs on what you're doing, who you're communicating with. I mean, that sort of information is very valuable to both marketers and to governments. You know, we saw in the Ukraine that, you know, in the early days of the current disaster there, that people who attended protests were surveilled there by the cell phone, and the government sent them a message saying, hey, we knew you were at this protest and we're watching you.
Hmm.
And so governments do use this data for extremely, you know, powerful totalitarian purposes. And yes, we do need to worry. It's less a Big Brother and more a lot of little brothers, although it seems to be a Big Brother as well. But the data is out there, and because it's there, because it's so easy to get, it's going to be used.
And there are very few chip manufacturers, right? They sort of control, well, with just a few major chips, all the kinds of stuff we're using.
Well, this gets to the problem of the economics of these embedded devices, that they're being made, yes, by very few manufacturers, that there's not a lot of quality control. The economics is always to make the next chip, right? Because now
right.
we're living in a world where these chips are getting better and better much very fast. So that's always building the next generation, not worrying about the previous generation. So there's the supply chain isn't really set up for the sorts of updates. You know, think of your Windows computer. You get updates, maybe a dozen of them every month. And those are all security updates because of problems that have been discovered and your computer's getting more secure every month. Your router doesn't have that system. Your Nest thermostat doesn't. Your refrigerator doesn't. I mean, these embedded systems are really going to be designed to be put out there and forgotten.
So, right? So what do we as consumers and people who have all these embedded systems, the Internet of Things, can we do anything to opt out, as the old phrase is, or to control the amount of security we have or privacy that we have?
It's very hard to. I mean, if you buy a Nest thermostat, you're signing up to, you know, what the Nest thermostat is, which is data that's comes from the thermostat to the central servers, available on your cell phone. I mean, you're buying into all of that. The way to opt out is to not get the device. If you get an internet-enabled refrigerator, you're going to get this data being produced and used. The only way to opt out, and you know it's not a very good way, is not to use the stuff, right? I mean, the same way to opt out of Facebook tracking. But you know, it's not very satisfying if your entire social life revolves around Facebook. So we are living in this world right now where it's hard. And a lot of these devices aren't necessarily ours. So the tracking that happens at a retail store, the tracking that happens for devices that other people have. I mean, if someone's wearing a Google Glass, right? That's a camera. That's recording outward. So you might opt out of Google Glass, but if the people around you haven't, you're being recorded. And of course, we're getting better at tagging photos, at IDing them. So you are now appearing in other people's data streams. Mm-hmm. Opting out is our only option, but it can be very, very hard because a lot of this is only barely under our control. And it gets where we need some of these devices to be a fully functioning member of society today.
Yeah, and you know,
I mean, you could not have a Fitbit, that's easy. But not having a cell phone, much, much harder.
But as people get more of these Fitbits or they get more of these fitness wristbands or clothing, there's going to be more data about your health going out there, your blood pressure, for example, any kinds of things that people might be interested in.
And you can imagine all sorts of ways to correlate this, right? Your health, your moods. You know, we know from people who have looked at cell phone data, surveillance data, right? Your cell phone tracks you everywhere you are, that by collecting a few months of this, you can figure out where people live, where they work, because of movement patterns make sense. So now once you know this, you can determine whether someone is behaving abnormally, whatever that means. You might want to use this for marketing. You might want to use this for security. You can imagine all sorts of ways to correlate, you know, this data with other data. You know, some of the NSA documents talk about some really interesting ways that the NSA is correlating different data about you to find different sorts of people. You can imagine a much less friendly regime doing the same sorts of analysis. Certainly, the companies that are trying to sell you things are doing this data. You know, when you hear about some of these retail advertising streams like automobiles, automobile advertising tends to be wasted except for the month you want to buy a car. And if somehow manufacturers can get information about the health of your car, your existing car, and figure out when you're likely to say, I need a new one, that's valuable to them. Right? That's the kind of surveillance data they're going to pay for.
I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Bruce Schneier, a writer and security technologist, author of Schneier on Security. And you know the car, bringing that up, the car is the cell phone of the future, isn't it? Considering all the embeds that are going to be in a car.
And people are talking about it that way. And it's embeds for various purposes. Right? There's diagnostics. Just knowing your tire pressure can be very valuable and can make you a lot safer. But also knowing the health of the car and then where the car goes, what it's doing, even benign things like the radio, what's on, what station is being listened to. I mean, you here at NPR would love to know how many people are listening.
I mean, and PRI, right now we're at PRI.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, knowing which network you are is important too.
but there's a safety thing specifically about cars. If cars can talk to each other, and you know, we're sitting at a traffic light, and this car knows the other car knows I want to turn left, and it wants to turn into me. Isn't there a safety thing that could happen where they're talking to each other and keeping distances, things like that?
There's enormous safety things. And when you move along the road to a driverless car, which seems to be only a few years away, cars will get much, much safer. Right? There's enormous value in the car knowing the road knowing the cars talking to each other, and getting people who are incredibly fallible and, you know, do things like drink and drive out of the loop entirely. I mean, the Internet of Things is something that has enormous marvels. It's not, that's why we're headed towards it. I mean, these security concerns are real, but they are around the edges. You know, we're actually going to like the fact that a refrigerator is going to warn us when we're out of milk and we should pick it up on the way home, because that's kind of cool, and it'll probably be delivered by drone automatically, and who knows what'll happen. But, you know, this is science fiction stuff, and we like it.
Yeah.
The fact that it has security concerns, most people, I think, are going to ignore, and that's going to be the problem. But I would never say, you know, don't do this, stop the future, right? The future is where the fun is.
Let me see. Talking about fun, let's go to the phones. Ankit in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Ankit. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, big time listener. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that, you know, that's all like what the guest is saying, I think, is very important. But when in terms of security, I think that is a very real threat because, you know, in the last few months, there's been several articles on tech sites that have talked about, you know, our ATM machines. They run on, you know, modified versions of Windows XP, and those updates Microsoft was going to stop putting out because of the constant adaptation of new technology, and they've kept delaying it. But if you look across it, that's a very real threat to our security. And on the other side, you know, you may talk about security in terms of personal, technology in terms of personal adaptation, but those sort of new chips that have come out in Europe where they embed them in the debit and credit cards and you use a special PIN to access that, so to make it more secure, that infrastructure is not in place in the U.S. And as you could see with Target, you know, I think Neiman Sachs and all those other big retail chains, they got hacked and, you know, certain countries
I got to go. Let me get a good call. Let me get a quick response.
So what the caller talked about is important. It's these legacy devices, right? Mentioning credit cards, mentioning ATM machines. This happens in embedded systems. You embed, you know, a digital thermostat in your house, and then you largely forget it for a few decades. Or you put a motion sensor, a temperature sensor. You can imagine all these sensors that you're not going to update them like you update your computer or your phone. You get a new one every few years. So these legacy devices, as they get older, right, vulnerabilities pile up, and they do get more vulnerable. And the caller was right that a lot of ATM machines use Windows 98, right, an operating system that's almost two decades old. And Microsoft has finally said, look, we're going to stop issuing security updates. This is ancient. You guys should be updating, and we're going to stop enabling this. Yet we have all its existing infrastructure. And we can't update.
All right, Bruce.
Credit cards are the same way.
Yeah, I got to stop it there. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us today, Bruce.
Oh, thank you.
Bruce Schneier, a writer and security technologist, author of Schneier on Security.